Chris was here. Got Councilman Cartier, Councilwoman Diller, Councilman Smiley, Councilman Weiner, Councilman Tackett, co-chair, Councilman Sheldon, and Councilwoman Kilpatrick. And I'm Joe Redda, and my aide, Chrissy Roberts.
Motion to approve the minutes of the previous meeting?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're good to go. Let's go out of order, because Billy's not here.
Karen is.
And we have, Council President Chris Pullock just showed up. So, go out of order, is that all right?
Yeah, fine. Second.
You're up, Dave.
This is ours. It is what it is. The title's very self-explanatory. We had a couple of emails back and forth with Milwaukee on the genesis of the funding. However, we are back to what was presented to the council members, and $300,000 moved into code to help with the abatements of properties.
Do you want to explain the emails, just in case somebody didn't read it, or?
Well, they wouldn't have all got them, but the runners. Jim, do you want to talk? Ed's not here, but the ordinance is exactly like it stands. It's like everybody got the funding, the genesis for the funding. Where to go? Coming out. What did it say? Reserves.
Yeah.
Coming out of reserves.
Yeah.
They'd sent us some emails thinking it was going to come out of a different pot.
Right.
But the last email we got today said this is it, this stands, and this is where it is. It'll come out of reserves.
Right. Okay. Councilman.
Yeah, I'm not going to belabor the point. I this isn't the first piece to come through with this. I have a concern that programs such as this are generating revenue. That revenue is being put in the general fund, and then when these programs need funding, we're taking it out of a reserve account.
Right.
No accountability for what's going in the reserve account. Quite honestly, it looks like the funds that these programs are generating are being used as operating funds to balance the budget and operate the county, knowing that this council will continually take from the reserves to fund these worthwhile programs. This is a worthwhile program, but it can stand on its own merits, and it's not being allowed to. And that's disrespectful to the program, not only the sponsor of the initial legislation, but those of us that supported the legislation. And quite honestly, I'm not going to support funds coming out of the reserve when, without an accounting of what are you doing with the money that you're taking from it and putting in the general fund.
I agree with you. I think it ought to be in a line item area where the money that's being taken in should be used for that specific purpose. And that goes for all the departments in all areas.
And when you get to the end of the budget or something, that's different.
Dave?
And I agree, certainly whatever council wants to do, you know, in the future as we move forward on it, it's a discussion that probably is worth having and decide to do. I mean, it's my understanding, and George may know this a little better because he's down there that much, but I just recently had a meeting and a conversation with one of the state legislators, and they were telling me how Delaware is a general fund state.
Right, right.
That everything goes into the general fund, and then it's divvied back out of the general fund. So, because somebody at one of my meetings, a senior one, was asking about designating money out of lottery or something specifically for, like, schools or this or that, and they were informed, no, everything goes to the general fund, and then it's divvied back out of that general fund. They don't do it. So I know they're not pulling it out of, like, say, reserves, but it's a general fund, and I guess we kind of do it similar to how they do it.
Right. George?
I'm aware of how the state operates. I'm also aware that you can ask just about any of them where the money's going, and they don't know.
Right.
I don't want to be in that mix, to be quite honest with you. I think we have an opportunity to have more oversight, and we should have it.
I agree. Councilman Cartier?
This is the first sort of approach to this that I recollect seeing since we started this program of using fines and other fees from problem properties my understanding is we always, you know, went into the general fund and we appropriated out of the general fund. Is this the first time we're actually proposing taking out of reserve? Can you give me an answer?
I think other monies has been taken out of reserve to compensate what was going on in that program. Not this particular program, but other ones.
I'm speaking of these.
Because that's, yeah.
Property maintenance revolving fund.
That's how we always go.
I was here when they started it, and the idea was you appropriate fines and other revenues derived from the code enforcement actions right. and revolve that money.
Well, for the most part, we've been...
That's it. You know, at the beginning of the year in the budget is when the monies are allocated from the general fund. That's how that happens. Right. Then when we allocate extra dollars in the past, just right. like this, they've come out of the reserves when they
brought
it to us.
So this is extra additional funds.
Mm-hmm. Because the fines, like you've just heard, that are being derived out of land use when they impose a ticket or a fine, that goes back to the general fund. It doesn't come back to the line item, which you've just heard. Maybe some council members want
How
to say.
How much money have we appropriated to the property maintenance revolving fund with this included?
I don't know if Jim brought those dollars, but it's just about $1 million.
It's close to a million, isn't it?
The total for our program, over 800,000. Jim Smith, Department of Land Use.
Who are you?
Jim Smith, Department
of
Land Use. So we do cover this money easily between the total ticket revenue, which is over 500,000 a year, plus the money that we recoup that was previously allocated to code enforcement. Rather than coming for a really large sum at the beginning of the year, as we indicated last September, we were coming at that time for only 200,000, and now we're coming back for the next $300,000 chunk. So it'll be a total of 500,000 for the year.
Councilwoman?
I guess 2 points. First of all, didn't we just deal with this a couple of weeks ago with community services? The
yes.
same type of thing where they
same
were going
thing.
Into
yes,
reserves, and then we
yes.
said, okay, how much do you
and they
have?
Went and found 300,000.
And they knew exactly how much they have. I don't care that it goes back into the general fund as long as in the ledger, somehow, they know that that money in the general fund was really for this, and it then needs to be escrowed so that when they need more money, that money comes out first, and then you figure out where you get the balance from. Second of all, revolving general fund in the state versus revolving fund in the state, two separate things. They have revolving funds for a variety of things, but we are a general fund state.
Right. George, you have your hand up?
I was just going to say, again, not to be redundant, I know we move on, is that, you know,
you're working on that.
Someone goes, listens to this, or goes, looks at this legislation, looks at this piece of legislation, and says, "Well, here's another program that this council and the executive previously have enacted. It may be good, but it's costing us money. It's costing us a lot of money because we have to pull out of the reserves, just as our concern was there. And that's not fair because it's not right. The mathematical pathway to this on the books." Does not give a clear picture of what this program does. That's my problem. So that's it.
Any other? John?
I think the way to close the loop is to understand exactly what the gross fines collected and other revenues collected from property and code enforcement actions. Like, what do we collect every year? We've got a hand up over here. What's the answer?
Oh, okay.
Sue Obuse, Department of Land Use. I have that figure from last year. We collected, we recovered, you know, we spend money on abatement.
Right.
And we spent in total on liens and abatement, we spent about $430,000. We recovered out of that $278,000, which is about 65%. And that's about what we're going to be able to do, you know, on a regular basis. We also collected tickets. Fines, and we collected a total of $582,000 in ticket fines. So that gives the program income revenues in total of $860,000. Our expenditures were against that $430,000. So the program itself pays for itself if you include
tickets. Self-sufficient.
Yeah, if you include tickets and the recovery.
How much was the tickets again? I'm sorry.
Tickets last year were
$582,000. Thank you.
George? And again, that's fine for us sitting here, but that doesn't, as John wanted to refer to, close the proverbial loophole, because we are taking funds out of the reserves, putting it in here to fund it. The revenue from here has gone into the general fund to pay for what?
Exactly.
To pay for what? So it doesn't clear it up, knowing it.
Revolving fund should have the money going back into that fund, so you see it revolving all the time. Some goes out, some comes in. If for some reason we have a really bad year with properties and we need to put more into it, then we should. If you let this go back, if you let the ticket money and this revolving fund money go back into the general fund, and then you take the next money out of reserves, you have just created another slush fund in the general fund that can be used for anything that anybody wants it to be.
We have Councilman Bell with us. I'm going to bring that up. Tim?
I guess, how can we fix this then? I mean, can we start now because of the budget's coming up in July 1st? I mean, this is Del Dot all over again, but on a smaller scale. Nobody can tell me it's not. I'm sorry, I'm shaking heads because you're getting gas tax that's going to the general fund. We're getting fines that should pay for this. We really should stop this now. I mean, you know, this money should go right towards this. And I don't know how we can do it, but I'd like to see that done.
Go ahead.
If you look at our budget presentation, our budget recommendation, and you look at page 22 under challenges, that's what we talk about here. And, you know, there are obviously many different ways you could resolve it. That would be your call, and you could, you know, working with the executive office. But there's a suggestion in there on a possible way it could be handle that budget time so that we wouldn't have to keep coming back to you several times a year for allocations. We know what the expenses are going to be. We know how much we're
going to
need every year, so let's just do it
right up front. Bottom line is the county executive could require an operational adjustment mandate in the lines, or maybe council has to do something that requires that the funding stay within, unless a transfer is approved by this council.
I agree. So, it's basically a line item without a, to take it out, you got to have the votes.
Something for us to look at. At least maybe seven will look at it.
I think definitely item for discussion. We don't have anybody from the administration or finance here, but to answer quickly, but certainly something we need to look at. But I think probably this legislation is pending for Jim to be able to do what he needs to do in his department, and to hold this up now, I'm not sure that would be to your best interest. So this is like we've seen before. This is not actually new. I think we should move this to get him funded while we work on.
And we're now entering our busy
season. Okay.
That's not the first time.
I understand. Don't want to hold it up. We want it to operate. Otherwise, we're not bringing in the revenue. We're not, above all, we're not servicing the residents of Newcastle County. So I'd ask the sponsors of this legislation to consider following it up very quickly with another piece of legislation that transfers $300,000 from the general fund back into the tax stabilization fund in order to replenish the $300,000 that we're pulling out to do this. So think about it.
Okay.
That corrects it for this one.
Anything else on this? Anything from the public? Okay, we'll go back to regular order of business.
So move.
The plan of Winchell.
St.
George's 100.
Pronounce.
East side of Jameson.
We can't road. You can't build it.
Approximately 2,550 feet, north of Boyd Corner Road. Major subdivision plan that proposes 513 dwellings units, SD zoning. Councilman Bell.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, wait, excuse me. You guys want to go back in regular order business?
Yes.
I forgot to ask you.
Maybe second.
Oh, he's
okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We're already here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate council's indulgence in moving this around. Actually, offered and took the opportunity to meet with council representing the developer on this project. This project has been around for quite some time. During my first term of office, almost 12 years ago, back in like 2006, 2008, the project started to surface, and this council passed a rezoning in 2010. So what I'd like to do is have the applicant and the counsel for the applicant to make their presentation. And there are several items that I've discussed with them that, because the plan has been a while and it ended up in court, and they can explain all that. Land use in the beginning had some opposition. Planning board was in favor, and now it's coming for to be put as far as record plan, and it was rezoned back in 2010. I just want to be sure, as a district council person, I think as council should be reassured that this is the same plan, that the plan is consistent with what we passed as far as smart code and how this fits in with the characteristics of the neighboring communities, walkable, bikeable, you name it. So I think it's a good opportunity for them to present, but I also, after they present, would like to give some observations, just ask some questions of our land use department and the applicant.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, members of council. For the record, my name is William Rodonda. I'm here on behalf of the owner and engineer of this property. Rick Wooden is certainly available to answer any questions you may have about this project. The project is called the Wynn Chelsea Subdivision. It's in southern Newcastle County. You can see some of the familiar names. Bayberry North is to the actual north of the property. The Bayberry Town Center is adjacent to and just below this subdivision. This is Jameson Corner Road. This is Boyd's Corner Road. This is in the heart of the development area in southern Newcastle County. It's part of the southern Newcastle County Transportation Improvement District. As indicated earlier, it's a mixed-use community. There are 133 acres here, and there are many types of dwelling units types proposed for this project. You have single-family homes, you have singles, village lots, twin lots, townhouses, and apartments. And what you'll note about this project, which was designed for interconnectivity within the other developments owned by other developers, but designed specifically to allow for interconnection between Bayberry North, the current entranceway, a secondary entranceway, all connect through or to this subdivision. You can see as the property along Jameson Corner Road, you have some apartments off the roadway adjacent to a future commercial center. And then as you go back into the project, there are single family lots within that area that above the Bayberry North single family lots. So the whole idea is to create a traditional neighborhood with a mix of units, which is exactly what the comprehensive development plan called for. The plan calls for a unit density of between 3 and 5 units, and the density here is just under 4 units per acre. So we're right within that range. You may be familiar, to the north, Highest Corner had a townhouse subdivision approved more recently with greater density than that. So the idea was blend this into all the various proposals within that district. I know that there are some transportation issues in that area. I know you're all familiar with the Southern Newcastle County Transportation Improvement District that was created for the purpose of addressing the many traffic issues as this area was going to be developed over the years to come. This project is a part of that district, and the investment by this project will be about $1.7 million under the agreement between Newcastle County and DLDOT. And that those payments will be required as different DLDOT bonds and permits are obtained as this project is developed. This is over 500 units total. We're looking at a 10 to 15 year build out, so it's not anything that's going to happen overnight. As you know, there are many developments in the area selling right now, but it's certainly a long-term project to fit within the long-term goals of Newcastle County. As Councilman Bell indicated, the rezoning did occur back in 2010, so some time has elapsed since that time. But the plan that you see before you now is the same plan that was approved for rezoning by Newcastle County. At that time, the planning board voted in favor of the rezoning. I think there was one objector, Mr. Singer, objected. His objection at that time was related to traffic issues. But at that time, the Transportation Improvement District wasn't finalized, and certainly not for this project, because the agreement for this project was not signed in 2014. So the only objection that was really raised by the planning board related to traffic and the impact of the subdivision. And since that time, the Improvement District agreement has been executed. The department also recommended in favor at that time of the rezoning. And I believe there's only one objection on council to the rezoning. That was Councilman Powers at that time. So the project has had the full support of the county to getting to this stage. Over the last number of years, the developer has worked intently with the land use department to meet all the code requirements, from dealing with the traffic improvement district issues to the site issues, the construction plans. All that has gone fully through the process and have been approved by the Department of Land Use. I know Councilman Bell raised some good questions about, is this the same plan that came through the rezoning? Yes, it is. There was an earlier version of the plan that was not part of the rezoning that called for more units and higher density, but it was reduced prior to the rezoning. And that's the plan that has been working its way through the process over the last number of years. Mr. Wooden's here. I know he has a lot at stake with this project in terms of the development of it and developing a nice, workable, walkable community with interconnectivity. He has experience with this type of project. He's certainly here to answer any questions you have when it comes to why it was designed the way it was, but he has a lot of pride in the way this project has been developed over time and has similar projects. He's certainly happy to answer any questions as well. Thank you.
Councilman Cartier?
When at the time of the rezoning, was that rezoned to ST?
Rezoned to ST, that's correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, John?
Yeah.
Councilman Bell?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Phil, would you point out the improvements like Jamison Corner Road right now? One of the improvements is to redesign that road. Could you kind of just explain that, maybe walk through that, as well as the way, as we discussed and kind of refreshed the plan, as far as the way the structures are being designed with the garages and the alleyways and things of that nature? I think it's important for everybody to kind of be refreshed as to what was presented.
There are slated to be $80 million worth of road improvements within this Transportation Improvement District, and there are some major issues that need to be addressed. And one of those is Jamison Corner Road currently runs, and it does not actually, there's not a four-way intersection at the bottom of Jamison Corner Road, and that creates a very substantial issue. What's going to happen is there's going to be a four-way intersection that will accommodate the full build-out of the Bayberry Town Center. And when that happens, that will alleviate a lot of problems. And I believe that very recently some houses have been demolished and work is starting on that. But it's very important that that move forward, because there's some schools to the south of the project that are having some issues right now. But as part of the $80 million worth of improvements, the idea would be to square off that intersection. It will certainly alleviate a lot of the issues that are being experienced at this time. But actually, I'd like Mr. Wooden to actually talk a little bit about the design of the project in terms of the alleyways and sort of the idea and concept behind this design.
Right. For the record, Rick Wooden, Winchelsea LLC. Approximately 90% of the street frontage is alley-loaded frontage. In other words, the garages will be accessed from the rear of the houses.
That program.
So when you go down the streetscape, which was important to us, you're not going to see a lot of garage doors. You're not going to see a lot of cars parked in driveways. We put all the garages in the back. When we did the multifamily, we put the buildings around the perimeter of the site and put the interior parking lot, the parking lot on the interior, so you wouldn't see a parking field as you drive past the multifamily. The variety of housing types, they're interspersed throughout the community, so you don't go in and see 200 townhouses in one section, and then you see another 150 single-family houses in another section. They're actually integrated. That creates a sense of community. We got wider sidewalks in the streets, street trees, interconnectivity, all the requirements of smart grid. So if there's any particular questions, but the only thing I can say architecturally, without the garage door, you can go to Parkside, which we've also developed, and look at the Parkside product and see the difference it makes when you put houses in when the garages are to the rear of the site. If you look at Bayberry, they do have some alley-loaded product. It's probably in the vicinity of 10% of the entire project. This is the reverse. Approximately 80% of the houses will be served, excluding the multifamily, will be served off their alleyway. So if any questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Excuse me a minute. I got one question, though. One of our colleagues on the council here always asks about walkable and, you know, someplace you can go buy a loaf of bread or in the community without getting in your car and going. Is there anything like that going to be in here?
Yes. Of course, we're not doing the Bayberry Town Center, which is commercial, mm-hmm. but that would be walkable to the shops. I think it's going to support the commercial. We actually endorse having the commercial next to the property. Mm-hmm. That'll create that interconnectivity. So the density is near the core of the commercial area, which will support the commercial.
Yeah.
I'd like to say also that, you know, with the driveways in the back, once again, it's very walkable. You come out your front door, the lead walk goes out to the front sidewalk. It doesn't go over to the driveway. That's not a walkable community. So when you come out the front door, you go straight out to the lead walk. The houses are pushed closer to the streets. The idea is to have front porches. You sit on the front porches. It's pedestrian friendly because you walk around the community, you see your neighbors. You don't go hide in your backyard.
Well, how far away would Bayberry be, the commercial end, from your project?
It literally backs up to us. So, you know, we share approximately 1,200 feet of common property line.
I think Councilman Wander had his hand up first. Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and yeah, have this please.
Sure.
And thank you for asking one of the basic questions we should always ask: the walkability and the how the buildings address the road. I'd like to commend Mr. Rick Wooden for understanding the principles of sustainable, walkable, mixed-use development. I want to talk about some of the things that I see are good and some of the things that institutionally could have been better, but perhaps not because of you, but because of the institutional impediment of the Unified Development Code getting in your way. First of all, this is not your segment, but I want to note for all of us that the commercial turns the corner. Every village, since the advent of mankind, you start with a village where the commercial turns the corner. Ideally, and you always want to have a main street, just like in Claymont, where Manor Avenue extended and Philip E. Pike creates a main intersection, the commercial should turn the corner. It should be on all four corners, ideally, or institutional uses. Bill, why am I? Oh, here we are. So I commend you for that. I also commend you for not putting snoot nose houses forward. Snoot nose means that the road says this is for cars. Citizens are second-class citizens. What snoot first is the garage. The garage should be behind. It should say it's a front porch community where the folks greet other folks, and it's a walkable, sustainable community where citizens are first class and cars are welcome but second-class citizens. That's what a village is all about. I want to commend you also for best attempts at interconnectivity. Ideally, the problem back in 2010, we didn't have Eileen Fogarty leading Land Use Department, so we would get plans and sort of accept them. What should have been is we should have had a general manager or Land Use Department demanding, why do you have all these stubs here?
I see that there's no stub here, but all of these cul-de-sacs are counterintuitive. You go back to pre-UDC, Fairfax, Klamath. You wouldn't have these dead-end roads, and then you have the traffic jams at the entrance because the traffic is completely dispersed, both for vehicular and for residential, for walkable and bikeable communities. So we've done a lot here. You were up against sort of a Stone Age land use department at the time. You were always way ahead of your time, and I want to thank you for that. I have to just make sure, where are the pathways internally and externally, and please comment on the transit orientation.
Well, in Winchelsea, there are no cul-de-sacs. As you say, they are not what you want in a near traditional community or a walkable community. We did have a greenway that matched up in Bayberry. So once again, that's a pedestrian corridor. You can walk all the way up through here, all the way down through here, all the way through this greenway path. So there is an interconnectivity of open space that allow you to go for miles and miles. The gridded pattern of the streets, you know, not only is this open space, you know, walkable from here, but these houses face the open space. If you notice over on Jameson Corner Road, no lots back up to Jameson Corner Road. So when you drive down the road on a collector road, you're not looking at rear yard architecture, you're looking at front yard architecture on a single loaded street. That creates a very walkable area around the perimeter of the site. Same thing with the road that runs along the future Bayberry extension. We ran the road down one side, so once again, this whole entire road, we didn't back houses up to their community. This becomes a very walkable interconnection from the town center through Winchelsea to Bayberry. So we want Bayberry to walk through Winchelsea. Thank you.
Anyone else on council? Councilor Cordier?
So you said that the total acreage you have involved here was about 138 acres?
130.
So did you use any of the smart code, new village and hamlet standards in the design of this?
No, we studied neo-traditional smart growth well before it came out.
Okay.
From Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, to outside of Washington, we've been to project after project after project. And we found the ST had requirements that would enable us to do smart growth. A variety of housing types, you know, five housing types. But what's not in the code is intermix them, but we felt that was important for smart growth, intermix them. So you want all lifestyles and households to be integrated. So we felt ST had the requirements that we needed, and that's what we used. It got to the point, a hamlet and a village, I think at some point, maybe land use can correct me, I don't think the acreage, we didn't have enough acreage.
So we reduced it.
Yeah, so we did not develop Bayberry. Now, if Bayberry was developed contingent with Winchelsea, then that could have been a situation that it may have been taken down the path of a hamlet.
Any other questions? Councilman Bell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And glad for the presentation, appreciative of that. As I mentioned, this came up during my first term of office, and you know, I think overall, when this was first designed and created, it's a very well thought out plan. And my main concerns, because I think there was a lot of work done initially that is reflective in this plan today, even though it's just being brought for recordation. But a couple of the questions that I had, and are very significant, is that when we voted on the plan and the characteristics of what would be the neighboring communities and everything, there were certain standards of construction, of architectural design, and so what, and I, the question really should go to land use, is I want to make sure that the plan that we actually approved initially, okay, under the rezoning, is consistent with the same of what we're moving forward now as the record plan, that there's been no significant changes in the standard of design, architecture, building materials, things of that nature, because that was important when we were taking a look at the type of structures and the town center and what was going to be there in the future. So I think that would probably be a question that maybe should be directed to land use to make sure that we're looking at apples and apples, that something hasn't been lost through the cracks.
Would you like to ask him?
Yes, please.
George Haggerty, Assistant General Manager for Land Use Department. As you can see, we have a little presentation up there for you to kind of show you how these kind of all fit. And the plan that's in front of you is I would say, as close to identical as possible to the plan that you got looked at in 2010 that you voted on. The code required that to happen anyway, so we wouldn't have brought the plan to you if it hadn't been consistent with the plan that was approved in 2010. You voted for the zoning in 2010, which essentially you accepted this use. Now, after you did that, then the plan had to come forward and now have the rest of the shape to it for all the other pieces of regulatory compliance, the stormwater compliance, making sure that there was concurrency with sewers, getting the transportation improvement districts squared away. They are paying about $1.868 million, I think, in the it's their share, their cost share into the transportation improvement district, as well as they will have improvements to make, safety and geometry improvements to make along Jameson Corner Road and their entrances and things of that nature. So it's been a long time in the process. I'm pleased to hear some of you recognize that Mr. Wooden is, not over the top in innovation, but certainly brings the more innovative plans to the department he has over the course of his time when he's, design plans. So you got to see some components of Councilman Cartier's point of smart code. Acreage is not big enough for it to be a smart code plan, but he got to bring some components to it. The alleyways are a big piece, and when you drive into a community that those that are loaded with alleyways as opposed to coming off the front entrance, you see the difference almost instantaneously. You see the difference. So we've worked for a long time, long and hard, to try to bring all these things together. Part of the difficulty is, as you can see, he's sandwiched in between Bayberry North, Bayberry Town Center, and himself, and trying to bring those pieces together. It certainly will become complementary, I think, to the Bayberry Town Center, because it gives them an opportunity. People can walk that short distance and utilize the facilities, the retail facilities. And there, as you can see, there's about 300,000 square feet of retail in the town center itself. So we were trying to show you that kind of depict that this is, if you go back and look at it when we first started looking at it in the presentation, we were just going to show you the site. So that's yesterday. That's kind of today, and that'll be tomorrow in the three versions that you see of what that's development. That's about as organized development as we've had in a while in terms of trying to coordinate activities together and get people. As Rick said, it would be nice if perhaps it was all owned by one. I'm sure Rick would have been willing to buy it. If Jay had been willing to sell it, and Jay would have been willing to buy it if Rick had been willing to sell it. It didn't quite work out that way. So, but it's as good a picture of parcel by parcel development that actually came together in the end as I think we have on the books today. I don't know whether that answered your question.
Yep, absolutely. Mr. Chairman, it does, and I want to make sure that was on the record because, we all have constituency. This plan's been around 2006, 2008, rezoned in 2010. And so there's a lot of folks that, since that time, has moved into the area, have invested in homes and whatnot. So we want to make sure, I think, as a council, that what we voted on then is what we're going to look to become a record plan. And so that's why I wanted the verification, and we had a meeting, and I appreciate it. As I said, this particular plan came forth in the beginning back in the 2006, 2008, and rezoning in 2010. Don't dispute and actually voted in support of the plan as far as the, you know, the mixed use and the way the plan is situated. When we talk about traffic impact, just so everyone at least is aware that this is addressing some traffic impact on Jameson Corner Road to realign it with Cedar Lane Road. What's occurred is Cedar Lane Road, directly across the street between Marl Pit and Cedar Lane, we approved a charter school, a high school to be built. There's a middle school that's been built. And Parkside, which is a beautiful development at the end of Marl Pit and Cedar Lane, is there. What has occurred is the majority of folks that go to work and leave their homes in the morning have chose to take Cedar Lane Road at the Boyd's Corner Road to come out to Delaware Route 1 and Route 13. So it's not like they're going 896 north. It's not like they're coming up on 896 to come across Boyd's Corner Road. So it has definitely started to impact the traffic in that area. We had a personal injury accident at the entrance to the middle school yesterday. I have witnessed the crossing guard having to literally jump out of the way of vehicles. We've contacted both the county and Delaware State Police to do traffic services on that particular road because of speeding. And everybody's in a hurry in the morning, not necessarily to drop the kids off to school, but to take the shortcut out the Boyd's Corner Road. That still remains a two-lane rural road that really has not been enhanced to the degree to accommodate that future growth and that future traffic. So, and that's why I have serious concern as to how all this will tie in and how it will be improved and everything. But like I say, this is the plan. Land use has confirmed that it meets the same standards they've been adhered to. And that was a concern that I had architecturally, design-wise, building materials, that we do have a lot of activity in that area, a lot of growth, and a lot of time and energy has been put into some of the neighboring communities' future, and we want to make sure that we're working in unison, that the plans are interconnected. And also, I think when you look at the cost of homes, affordability, what's being provided, and how it complements the other communities, I think that that's the type of things, you know, we need to be looking at. So with that, I'm fine.
Thank you very much.
Councilman Weiner.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. There are a couple points I want to make. I want to thank George Haggerty and sponsoring Councilman Mr. Bell for emphasizing the importance of quality construction materials, excellence in architectural design, because communities actually embrace density, but not unless you have architectural excellence and quality construction materials, as well as how the buildings lay out, how you integrate different socioeconomic groups, how you make it easily accessible commercial, office, residential, recreational, institutional, and how the buildings address the road. There's a geometry to how buildings face the road. What I also want to emphasize is that it takes decades for absorption of a project like this. Newcastle County now is beginning to lead rather than follow. We would follow a developer who had a plan rather than saying, we're setting a high standard for this area up front with design guidelines. You've got to live by that. We're never going to let a new developer come in and rip the heart out of design guidelines by buying it so he can make more money in the short term. And we're going to make sure the commercial hugs the corners. We're going to make sure that we have walkable urbanity and the cars are welcome but second-class citizens. And you can do that like Centerville did, because it's a wide road, but the message when you come into that road is you're now entering a village and you've got to go slower. And so we have to understand the solution is simply not to blow out, like in Claymont, a two-lane road and make it a six-lane road. It's instead to send a message through the visual, context-sensual, sensitive designs on how cars look at that they can no longer speed through this because this is a village. And I've been passionate about this for decades. Yeah. That hasn't changed. I'm happy to see the Land Use Department now taking the lead, because we can't always depend upon enlightened developers.
like we have here. We're going to get some developers that are far from enlightened that are going to want to come in and maximize dollars. We have to say no, we won't compromise on those standards.
Councilman Cardiac.
Yes, so the town units that you have, they're going to be rear-loading the garage through an alleyway?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's I can tell you that, you know, in Darley Green, that's how they're set up, and it really does lend a much more attractive, you know, front elevations to the properties. You know, and I think that's a very important innovation, and all of our townhouse developments should be set up like that. Now, are you gonna have rear decks off those townhouse houses?
Yes.
Okay. One of the things they learned in Darley Green, just to pass along a design point, you can cantilever that deck rather than having stilts, and it makes the product look a lot more attractive, and eliminates, you know, all that supports coming out of the ground and the limitations on turning into the garage, turning movements. So they've gone to a cantilever deck with no support on, you know, on the corners.
Okay.
And that's something that, you know, you should probably look at. Looks a lot cleaner, and it's probably less costly to do it because you're integrating it into the structure of the joists of the house, and, you know, it really improves the look and adds to the accessibility of the garage with the turning movement, not having that stilt in the way.
Okay. Councilman Spahn?
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything, but since comments were made about possibly setting the standards, I'm going to say, I think it looks great. Hope it all works out for the residents and the people who are going to live there. The 7th District is apparently a whole different world. I've said this before, so if you want to set standards, I want to say it now. The traffic interconnectivity that you have, where I have it in the 7th District, they get Jersey barriers from DelDOT to close it off because they don't want the interconnectivity. Other than the greenways, which the greenways I have in my district are on the outsides of the communities, but where there's walkability in between the communities, they petition DelDOT for privacy fences because they don't want the intrusion and the trouble to come with it. I don't say that for yours. I just say that so that when a developer comes forward in the 7th District, I don't want to hear that I sat here silent and praise this. I do think it's great. I hope it works out. And not to be rude, but as my saying is, Andy, we ain't in Mayberry anymore. You know, it just... So
Mayberry,
I hope,
not Mayberry.
Exactly. So I hope it works out, but just to clear, in the 7th District, they want barriers and privacy fences. They don't want anybody in the community other than those that live there. I'm realizing, although I've told them, you are fencing in crime as well as out crime. So,
Councilman Bell? Yes, Mr. Chairman, just briefly, and I agree wholeheartedly with Councilman Smiley. I think that sometimes when we think about interconnectivity, that we think that one size fits all. And it truly doesn't when you have older communities and newer communities being built. And that in itself causes problems. And give an example is you get down the Port Penn corridor and you see Dutch Neck Farms, and then you have folks that are cutting through a development to get out to the main intersection. And Lighthouse Farms, which was just approved, will have sidewalks, will have lights, and yet Dutch Neck Farms is an older community with swales in front, with no sidewalks, children playing in the middle of the streets, and we've already been asked about the interconnective road. Can it be not built? So, I mean, I think that when you look at interconnectivity, when you have an opportunity to design and go forward and be very creative and do it in the proper manner, interconnectivity doesn't always work with trying to blend newer developments right. And tying them into older communities. And in fact, sometimes it has the reverse effect.
Right.
So.
That's good to know. Anything from the public?
Right.
Yes.
My name is Peggy Schultz, and I'm just speaking on my own behalf. I want to commend the developer. There's so many wonderful qualities about this proposal, and it really is very much like Lakelands in Gaithersburg, which
yes.
was has been such a successful traditional neighborhood design with the garages in the back, with a real sense of pedestrian orientation, with the possibility of walking to go to shopping and just walking for relaxation throughout the development with and the porches, actually, there's a lot of research, a little research anyway, that shows that porches are incredibly important in building a sense of community. So even though it seems like a detail, and why are we mentioning porches, but it turns out to be a really important, intangible almost, that develops a sense of community. But it just looks great.
Thank you. Anything else from the public?
Okay, moving on.
Ordinance
number 15-042. It's to amend Newcastle County Code, Chapter 2, Administration, Article 3, Officers and Employees, to require county elected officials, appointees, and employees to report notices of alleged violations of the Newcastle County property, maintenance building, vacant property, and or rental code for properties they own for which they are responsible to the land use department, general manager, and their offices and department of general manager. Councilman Smiley.
You know, I look around the room, and I guess I'm going to spend a lot of time on this at the council meeting, maybe, but basically I should be able to say as per title. The purpose of this is basically sends the message to the public, and it's a reminder to all county employees that we hold ourselves a little bit higher to the codes that we put in effect, and we're just as responsible, if not more so, than the residents of Newcastle County to keep our properties up, whatever they are.
Anything from the council on this? Anything from the public? Okay. Other? No other?
Real quick.
Go ahead.
It's not land use, but since we are here, I've said I'll do this. I sent an email to all members of council, just trying to get the word out there that the reassessment ordinance, I will be tabling it at next week's meeting, to hear 2 weeks later while I research some suggestions and that have been brought to me. So I'm just trying to get the word out there. It'll be on the website that way, so we don't have people coming in that want to speak one way or the other, and it's not going to be on the agenda. So there'll be no reason to discuss it in finance either.
Okay. Anything else under other? Public comment. Like I stated, we started with quorum, and we're a little below quorum right now, but we can still adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Thank you.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
August 2008. Hi, how are you?
Hello, Lane. You do.